everybody that's involved here and have a discussion. Who wants a couple of little quick things?
Some evening reading, is that what that is, Dave?
Break it down into a couple of minutes, Dave.
I tell you what we'll do. We can get down to the brass tacks, which is those.
Yeah, let's do that.
The Wiling Builder there?
That's just for the fire department. Casey's is usually about 5 times what that one is. Did you get your Wiling
Builder? Did you get one of these today too, Casey?
I did.
These Wiling bills?
I got it last week.
And how much was it?
$5,400.
$5,400 plus another 1,000. $6,400.
That doesn't count search and rescue, does it?
And that's just
part of your bet.
Search and rescue don't have any one. They have 3 Wiling radios, so pretty minimal. But it does
that's
not account
month?
For EMS.
That's 1 month.
Yeah.
So $75,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then EMS is on top of that too, which we don't.
And then EMS on top of this.
So $100,000.
$100,000 a year. Wow.
And that's
wow.
The current charging fee.
Right. And you haven't signed anything that says you'll pay the
That's a lot more than I thought it was going to be.
Well, and they told us that it was going to change from 75% usage, 25% inventory, to 100% usage. This bill doesn't reflect that. We were told it was going to.
So
realistically, how much would we be looking
at? Does that mean it would go up?
It's still the same bill that's due. And what? A couple of years ago when this first came to legislature, they basically came to the legislature and said, hey, we got $5 million a year in annual maintenance costs that we got to pay to Motorola. We got to figure out how to break that up. And they came up with a mathematical formula. They said, okay, WIDOT's going to take care of this, and they're going to get, you know, what they came up with was about $2.2 million that was going to go to the local users.
Yeah.
So there's still that $2.2 million that needs to be paid, and it doesn't matter if they do 100% based on each time you push the talk button, or if it's on inventory of number of radios or however it is, that same bill is going to get due.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a shell game where they're just moving things around, but they're still going to charge the same amount in the end.
Interesting.
I don't see it changing at all.
Gotcha.
Unless it goes up.
If it's going to change,
it's only going to go up.
It'll go up.
Wow. Okay. Sorry to do this too distract you. Go ahead, Chad.
Okay. Well, so Jack Hart, our radio consultant, has a previous commitment today. He's doing a site tour, but he gave a summary of every bit of information there that was in front of Dave, and kind of a 3-page format. I thought it'd be beneficial just to review that, but he's on page 2 there, about 2/3 of the way down. He says vendor recommendations. He gives his summary recommendation there, and that's essentially the point that really needs to be brought up here today, is that our vendor recommends Harris. We've spoken in the past as far as the technical review. I recommend Harris. Dave does. Sheriff Lear does. I assume Sheriff. I don't want to put words in your mouth. But after reviewing all the technical components here, there's quite a bit of improvement on the Harris proposal as compared to the Motorola proposal. And if you look there on page 3, that's really the differences between the two proposals. And you'll see if you look down the Harris column, it says included, meaning that they met the proposal that we asked for, and the bottom line price that they've presented is included in that proposal. As opposed to the Motorola column over there, it says optional, meaning that if you want to purchase that, we can, but for a significant upgrade. And for those costs are pretty significant. Dave and I were talking about some of those costs earlier. So that's really the summary bottom line there, is that not only is the Harris system proposing a 5-site tower build-out, with a 5th site being in Marbleton because of the location of the Hogsback Tower, there was still going to be a little dead spot there in that the municipalities down there. And so the Harris, based on their calculations, saw that, and they say, well, we think we need to put another site on top of the water tower there in Marbleton. So in addition to the 4 sites that we asked for in our original request for proposals, Harris says, hey, you're going to need one more. So even with the 5-site system, they still come in at basically $1 million less than their competitors. And you see the numbers there that you're looking at. The thing that that Jack wanted to emphasize to the board here today, though, is that basically what he says is don't focus just on the number and think that's the final walkaway number. He said there's some work that still needs to be done to build out the towers and the shelters. And I spoke with Dave earlier today about that, and I'll have him speak to that in just a moment. But on top of the technical, you know, place and repeaters and so on, we still need to do some infrastructure improvement on the towers and shelters, and there's going to be some costs associated with that. And then there's going to be some ongoing maintenance costs. And that's something else that I'll defer to Dave to speak to is you know, the proposals. You see the annual maintenance there. There we go. Annual maintenance, 168 versus 101. Both of those proposals makes the assumption that Dave Smith is not here and that he doesn't perform any work for us. So that's them coming out of Salt Lake or wherever their closest facility is to send a technician up and provide the repairs as necessary. So part of Jack's point here is that you know, when we move forward and we're ready for the contract, we're gonna need to negotiate some of those finer details, specifically about, you know, how does it look with Dave doing the maintenance, and you know, what's that ongoing maintenance going to be just for the software upgrades, basically. So that's kind of an unknown. And then the other thing that Jack hit on there on page one was that probably the biggest unknown in the whole thing is, what if the FCC does not have sufficient licenses available to make this whole thing to come together? And so Jack said in his recommendation that, you know, contingent on that basic premise, we can't move forward with awarding the contract until we got 100% guarantee that there's sufficient licenses and that this thing's going to work the way we anticipate. Because without licenses, there's no point in even, you know, building anything out. And so the one thing that Jack did say in his recommendations in here is that the Harris proposal does give specific guidance and assurances that those licenses are going to be available. The Motorola proposal does not do that.
Oh, okay, Mr. Chair. Harris proposal does guarantee that those licenses can be...
I shouldn't use the word guarantee. They okay. They give a stronger commitment that okay. They believe so.
So what does it take to get that, the licenses?
I'll answer the question.
Go ahead.
Okay. So we contracted originally when we asked for Jack Hart to be our radio consultant. There was a company called Easy Spectrum Analysis that had done the baseline analysis and identified available frequencies that we could use. Building on that basic template that they established for us, it looks like the frequency should be available and that this thing should be able to move forward. But that's it's an important question that before any final contract is awarded, before we sign any, the proposal is just a rough estimate, but we still got to work out the final details of the final contract. And in that final contract, we're going to need to get some very strong assurances of the availability of those FCC licenses.
Other questions?
You pretty much answered my Easy Spectrum. I, as I recall, said there was plenty of frequencies available for several counties.
Well, if you remember, the original proposal that we released was for a simulcast system, and the difference is that we asked for four different towers, but all four of those towers were going to use the same, basically six frequencies. So in reality, we only asked for Easy Spectrum to look at six frequencies and make sure that they were going to work for us. When the vendors came back with their proposals, they said, hey, the county is too big, we can't make a simulcast system work, we're going to have to do a multicast system. And the difference is now each one of those radio sites, those towers, are going to have their own five frequencies or six frequencies. So now we're going to need, you know, 30 or better frequencies instead of just six frequencies. And that's so Easy Spectrum only looked at those original six frequencies. But the Harris proposal, without giving a guarantee of availability, they've given a strong commitment that they believe that the they'll provide support and that they believe those frequencies will be available, where the Harris proposal didn't give any assurances of availability. The Motorola did not give any assurances.
Okay. Motorola, when we hired Easy Spectrum, we were worried there was some talk about the state was trying to pick up all the extra frequencies. So has that occurred?
That did when they built out Wildlink. When we narrow banded in January 2013, the state made a huge grab of the business band, which is, we're talking mid-band VHF. It's 150 to 174 megahertz. It's what they refer to as the business band. Mm-hmm. The state grabbed a bunch of those. You know, Harris has looked at it, and they've said that they have found frequencies that are there. Nobody's going to put it in writing and guarantee it until we're willing to give them some money, because you're licensing stuff with the federal government. And anytime you deal with the federal government and you have to go through a third-party frequency coordinator, Easy Spectrum is a frequency coordinator. Mm-hmm. That's just the way this process works. Whether it's broadcast, whether it's two-way, whether it's ships, whether it's aviation, this is just the process we use. So, worst-case scenario, frequencies aren't available. The engineers look at it in the end and they say, not going to do it. I won't sign off on it. I don't think I can make the system work. Worst case scenario, we look at a different frequency band. That's as bad as it gets. As far as the build out, as far as the infrastructure, the towers, the buildings, the consoles, all of the stuff except the radio transmitters and receivers, all of that stuff remains the same. So, in my opinion, I don't want to see us hold the project up on that. We can shift this into different frequency bands if we have to make it work. If Harris says they can make it work with the VHF, I believe them. They're not going to make that dice roll and get the mud on their face on their first project in Wyoming unless they're pretty darn certain that they can make it work. But worst case scenario, if they can't, we shift it to a different frequency band, which I have quietly wanted to see happen anyway for a long, long time for this exact reason. The VHF band is really crowded. Think of it as a street with a lot of traffic on it. You move two lanes over, there's not near as much traffic in those lanes, and you operate. Eventually, we're probably going to be doing different bands anyway. How big a time frame that is, no one knows. So, unless you guys have any questions on that, I can go into the maintenance costs a little bit.
Do we need to just skip one step and go to the different bands?
I don't think so, because to do that requires you guys writing more checks, because you're going to have to start replacing some equipment. And the radio equipment we have now is VHF. We would transition into dual band or tri band equipment, which the subscriber units, the mobiles and the portables in the field, they would do both. Think of it as a cell phone that works on Verizon and Union. Those radios cost a little more than single band radios. The prices gap is narrowing, and it has been for 10 or 15 years. But they're not the same yet. So unless we have to, I wouldn't recommend it at this point. This is a pretty big mouthful to chew up and digest financially at first. So
I mean, what do you
I'd love it if you guys want to do that.
So Jack actually addresses that here in the back, and he says next steps. He says it's recommended that the Sublette County does not sign a vendor contract until the FCC licensing issues are clearly understood. So that's really the next step is let's move forward with the proposal, but we don't need to sign a final contract with the vendor until we've identified exactly the availability of those FCC licenses. And he says, you know, based on that, take a course of action for the site upgrades, and Dave will talk about the necessary work on those site upgrades in just a moment. And then just work out some of the final details and make sure that this final product is going to be a turnkey product that you know, once we award this bid to the vendor that you know, we can really rely on them to give the final product to us and make sure this thing's going to work in the end. And we can build some assurances into the contract to make that the case.
Mr. Chairman, to get the licenses, what's the time frame?
It depends, a few weeks at most.
Okay.
Basically, you're going to go to a frequency coordinator and you're going to say, we need X amount of licenses. And the coordinator is going to say, okay, a license from the ground up costs this much money. And you're going to say, here's my money, get to work. Harris, hopefully, we can have Harris put it in their contract that they're responsible for licenses. The way the contract will most likely work, they're going to want a certain amount of percentage of the contract up front. Just to get the ball rolling, to buy parts, whatever. It's just like any other contract. You're going to give them a deposit. With Motorola, it's usually 30%. That's what historically we always give them when we sign the contract. They give us an invoice at contract signing for 30%. And then you have milestones. There's a bunch of different ways to do it. But usually you'll have milestones or benchmarks along the way of the contract based on the progression of the build-out. And then at that point, more money is due, whatever. In this contract, I'd really recommend you guys do a big retainer at the end, and give them a big deposit at first. That way, there's a lot of incentive for them to get it done on time, and sign it, seal it, and verify it. And we also need to put an operational window. So when they say, okay, project's done, we start the clock, a 60 or a 90-day clock at that point, and then we run with it. Because the last time we did a significant project was our upgrade down here, and we gave them their last round of money, and then we had hell with the NICE system because it was just a train wreck. And we knew about that 30 days after we'd paid them the last check, but we had zero recourse on those guys to get them to realistically come address it. All we got was lip service and letters of intent and, you know, touchy-feely phone calls, but nobody ever did anything for a year and a half.
We can build that into the contract, though, and say, you know, here's the payment schedule, and based on quality assurance, then you'll get final.
But back to the licensing issue, they're going to want some money up front because they're going to be writing checks for that, and they're going to be writing checks, obviously, for all the equipment. But that's not internal to Harris. That's a third-party consulting firm that Harris or us, however you guys want to do it, is going to write a check to go get us 45 licenses.
That's included in the proposal from the Harris, though.
Yeah, they've priced that out. So
it's in this number, right?
Yes.
Wouldn't that behoove us to have them do that?
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. We you know, unless they just flat say we're not going to do it, and they're not going to say that. You know, they're not going to risk this job over the licenses. What they'll probably want is some contract that says we're going to go out, we're going to do our best. If we can't do it, you're not going to hold it. You're not going to hold the whole contract over our head, and we should be accommodating to that request when they do it and say, great, let's get this put to rest one way or the other right now, just as fast as you guys can do it, and then we'll start pouring concrete and stacking steel and bolting racks down.
Okay. Any further questions, gentlemen? Commissioner Noble.
This number does not include the upgrades on the buildings or the antennas.
Which one are you looking at? The 2675?
Yeah.
Right. And here are, this is the Harris number book if you guys want it. But there is Harris's numbers for those buildings and towers. We can do a lot better than that.
So I don't want
them. Well, you can look at them for reference. The Hogsback needs a new building. There's no getting around that. The buildings that Harris and most of these types of companies use are a pre-made building that's fabricated someplace in the Midwest or wherever, California. And they just bring them in on a truck and they set them on a foundation or they set them on a gravel pad and bolt them down. They've got the ACs in them. They've got everything in them. They're pretty slick, but they're about $150,000 a pop. You know, if you guys want to do that, that's the fastest way to get a good building. I think we can build buildings much cheaper. But then you run into the issues of construction and that sort of stuff. I would be okay with one of those on Hogsback just because it's quick, it's fast, and Hogsback logistically, that works. There's a lot of room, a lot of flat area. On Kismet, I don't think so much, and we've got a five-year-old building up there that we spent $60,000 on that I think we could easily just knock one of the narrow walls. It's a rectangle building. If we knock the narrow north wall out, we could basically double the size of that building right down the ridge there. It's poured concrete block on a concrete foundation, so it's a pretty simple construction type. And then we'd still have room up there to build a tower.
Question. This information you gave, that's what's listed under optional here. Is that not right?
For yes.
Shelters and generators, isn't that the total figure?
Yep. That's their total for the whole shebang. Yeah. But they break it down individually there.
So, right. But that's the bottom line.
That's the bottom line if they do it their way with everything. I think we can reduce that number significantly.
But still side-by-side comparison. There's
still side-by-side. Oh, yeah, and the Motorola number is the same. That 3.7 doesn't include any of those things. So side-by-side comparison, if you compare mostly apples and mostly apples to mostly oranges and mostly oranges, it's still $1 million difference or better. And that number aside, the money aside, the Harris proposal technically is hands down a better proposal. I mean, there's just no question about it. So I think they really have went out of their way to try them. And get in the game. And then there's the thought that you guys are kind of taking the first step in the state to break free from the bonds of Motorola. And my guess is there's a lot of people right now that are doing this hoping that you guys decide to part with Motorola and go a different way.
So if we accept this RFP and there's a motion to go with Harris, then at that point, we turn Harris loose to make sure that they have the frequencies.
Yes.
Is that right? So there's no obligation until we have those frequencies.
They're probably going to want... I mean, no, there isn't. To answer your question shortly, no, there isn't. I think it would be wise for you guys to phrase your motion such that you authorize a signer for maybe a certain percentage or something that shows financial intent on the part of the commission and the part of the county that, yes, we want to move forward and we're going to put our money where our mouth is. What we don't want is a negotiation process that ends up evolving through time and burning time up. If we want to get it built, we need to know what we're doing, and when the ground thaws and we can start getting the sites, we need to start building.
Okay. We accept the RFP and we go into enter into a contract with them, but do we wait on down payment until we have?
Well, that will be dependent on how the contract is written. But you guys could authorize, you know, up to a certain percentage or something at the discretion of Mary or Shad or a member of the commission or the sheriff or whoever. But I think when you leave this meeting, if they know, hey, Sublette County's ready to write checks as soon as we present a good contract and a breakdown of what those checks are going to be used for, specifically the frequencies. You know, it's going to cost us this much to get you your licenses.
That should make the contract.
That's just what I was going to say. We won't be... We can vote to move forward on the RFP, but we can't enter into an agreement till Matt's got a contract written anyway.
Okay, and they probably might. I'm guessing both these vendors have a contract ready to go right now, depending on who's chosen. Their contract will be in their benefit, obviously. Everything will be the way they want it. We can go through with a Sharpie and a highlighter.
Yeah, and that's fine. They can send their copy of their contract, and Matt can have something to start with.
Right, right.
So the idea being maybe 30%. Up front, 30% retainage?
I would say, you know, something to that effect, and we can hash out the exact numbers, but yeah, percentage up front, here guys, go, here's money, let's get her done. Obviously with strings and legal penalties and whatnot attached. But then at the end of the contract, when they hand you the keys to the system and say the system is up, it's 100%, it's been validated,
we want
60 to 90 days or more before they get their final payment.
But we don't need that in the motion. We could just get that.
No, the motion would just be to accept the RFP and to move forward.
Right.
That's all the motion would be.
The contract's got to reflect whether we're working on these buildings or you are.
Right. That will be correct. And
so we need to know what you think.
I think we need to duplicate the Hogsback Tower at Kismet. Reason being, that's a bit overkill. We were going to do one like what's out here. But if we put a little bigger one on Kismet, you guys will be able to accommodate other users, specifically Wildlink, at some point in the future. I think that for the extra cost, which is not going to be significant, and the robustness of the tower, the extra room on the tower, it gives you guys a little bit of political bargaining power, if you will, in the future, if you so choose to use it. If not, great, don't do it. But all things being equal, plus we have two identical towers at two sites, and that's a good thing. The more of these things you make cookie cutter the same on each site for when you're bolting stuff up and you're taking stuff down and logistics and parts and things like that, it gets cheaper if everything is uniform. So,
Commissioner Bowsman, yeah.
Yeah, just a question. Do you envision then, say we go with this recommendation, would we then be in a position to go to Wildlink and say, we're offering you the use of these towers, but we would like help in doing some of these build-outs for equipment? So in the end, if they do that, wouldn't it be logical that they put some money into it?
If you could make that argument and get them to actually do that, sure. If I was working for Wildlink and you asked me that, I would say, well, you guys are building a Ford system and we're running Chevys. That would be my short answer to that. That's a valid answer, especially if in this case Motorola doesn't really like to play nicely with other children. So that's my feeling on that. I mean,
do we go?
But wouldn't they still want to use space on?
They would possibly want to use space on Kismet, and that's the only one because we've already got them on White
Enterprise as well.
Well, Enterprise, yeah, that's right. Thank you. Hogsback, they've already got a site up there. The state's had a site up there long before we ever did.
So if they're gonna use Kismet and Enterprise, why should they not put some money in to help and
Well,
fit the site to where it met their needs as well as ours.
Sure, sure, and that's a valid request from your guys' part. I hope that that conversation doesn't slow us down, but I think that's a very valid valid conversation. Now, that's on the presumption that Wylink actually wants to be on Kismet and Enterprise.
Well, I guess if they got enough money, they can go build their own towers.
Right, right. Yeah. And I would
think... It doesn't make sense.
I don't see how that would slow us down in the fact that we wouldn't be waiting for their money to move forward on
sure,
this.
Sure.
We'd be using our money anyway. Absolutely. We would just receive money from them if they decided to participate.
Or so I don't see they decide to get on, it's a lease program.
I don't see it slowing us down
right.
in our project.
Right. Okay.
So, okay, you had a comment? Or was that it?
That's pretty much it. Okay. Rather than slow this down, just let them lease from us when they do decide to join in.
If they decide to join in.
Commissioner Lawhauser.
There was a comment made earlier that being the first person or group in the state of Wyoming to do this, it's been in the past that people are willing to go backwards, bend over backwards for us to get their foot in the door in the state of Wyoming. And I believe that we need to take advantage of that if we're going to do this. Because
yeah.
it's
exactly,
going to be to our benefit.
That's exactly what Harris has done in their proposal.
So mm-hmm. basically the path forward would be to accept the RFP and just set the wheels in motion on the contract.
Yep.
Mr. Chairman, I so move.
Okay. Second.
It has been moved and seconded that we accept the RFP and accept the services of Harris as presented and move forward in drafting of a contract for our communication system. Any further discussion?
Do you have anything, Casey?
Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you, guys.
Move forward.
Guys, thank you very much
yep.
for your time.
Good work. Good work. So the next thing will be they will send us a copy of their contract, and we'll start going through it. And will this be enough to get them started on the
No, it'll all be the same contract. I'll sit down with
this get them started.
We'll hash out.
We'll tomorrow, or maybe this afternoon, whenever it's convenient for Mary, she'll send a letter out.
It'll be separate contracts with individual vendors, and I'll give you guys a list of who and how.
And if it's okay with the board, I'll
but what I'm going to do is
get working with Harris and figuring out the details of that contract and get started on the frequency.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we've got time to negotiate that.
Sure,
we could even mention
that.
We've still got 4 months to negotiate.
Sure, we do. Yeah, and see what happens.
Yeah,
that's what you're telling me.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Sean. Hey, Sean, good job, man.
Thank you. I appreciate everybody. Thanks for your support.
Thanks, Chad.
We've jumped in.
Yeah.
Oh. Starts right
It's That's all right.
But you can tell they did tailor that trying to get us to.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a good deal.
I feel comfortable doing anything that's by ourselves.
Absolutely. I feel a lot more comfortable.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, then we have ourselves to blame.
That's exactly right. Absolutely. Yep. And it's not like the guys didn't do the background for us.
And tried to make the other work.
Sure. Absolutely.
I ran into the governor in our reception and we chatted about this. It was a short conversation, but it was interesting.
Was it interesting?
Did you get a thought?
Losers hold a deal of cards.
He was
winners
mad.
Winners quit, losers hold a deal of cards.
My take was he's been fed a lot of information that was one-sided. And we knew that. We told him it was in the state's best interest to look at what we're doing because it would probably be helpful for what they're doing. And he was like, really? And I said, at any point, if you want to hear our side, please contact us.
And he goes, yes, we need to sit down together. And I said, we have no intention of any harm on Wild. We are just building out our conventional system. And he was like, his face went flush. He's like, oh, I didn't know that. And I was just going to knock on
my
of course I got it. So, yes, so I don't know what he was thinking. And so he was definitely interested in that exact conversation I just had. And that's pretty much word for word what him and I talked about. We're just sharing. So, I think that's moving forward. Oh, yeah. They're going to call us.
Yeah, you play goalie. You seem to
know. A couple of things. Just tell us. It's a significant improvement for everybody.
That is always a good thing.
Yeah.
Can I have your copy of the
Yep, you sure can, because you know where it was going.
Well, we made some progress.
We did.
So you know that the part of this whole deal that is crappy.
Yeah, she did listen.
There's some connections.
Just put them on top of the table. Get Mac and all them, just put them on top of the table.
You want me to relay that to Mac?
Yeah.
Talent.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
There's
trying to
share
it,
you
know,
because her husband
is the main attraction.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Put it on the table, man.
Your
piece.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
No. But you're going to see it
come out. There's a connection. There's some connections there.
Would you have
that? Absolutely.
Well, yeah. See, we need that.
Well, it sounds like Tom.
Tom's phone.
All right, it's 1:30. Let's continue on with our schedule. Clint, you have the floor.
Okay.
Hi, Clint.
Hello, how are you guys doing?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm going to start by giving you an invitation to our spring thaw party.
Oh, thank you.
It's not March 8th.
Can you guarantee we'll be thawing at that point?
No, I can't.
Thank you.
We'll be gone.
No, I guarantee we won't be thawing by that point.
Will we be gone?
That's the day we're coming home from D.C.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, so I'm here begging as usual. That's all I do when I meet with you guys.
Just as long as you come with a solution.
Oh, I got solutions. No, you need some solutions.
All it takes is money.
Take money.
All it takes is money.
We're trying to solve this Trapper's Point access problem, and it's been a problem for a long, long time, and everybody's kind of avoided it because it's really complex. But we've just spent a lot of money improving the site up top, $35,000 project they're going to finish this summer. And I don't know if it's going to bring that much more visitation to it. But right now we've got a deteriorating road and no legal access. And we need to solve that. And I've met with the BLM, and they're very supportive of trying to solve this problem. But we have to do it under all the rules, everybody's rules. So I'm here seeing if you guys might be part of that solution.
Is it all BLM?
It's all BLM.
The whole thing. There's no private that crosses there.
No. Okay. There's a picture right here. The second page. And the Historical Society owns this 10 acres here on the side. And it's completely landlocked by BLM. So the access is right off of East Green River Road. And there's about a half mile, actually 0.4 mile to the top of the hill.
Yep.
That's the road.
Mr. Chairman, Clint, in that regard, Mac and I are going to be attending a travel management plan meeting with BLM on Thursday of this week, and we would be more than happy to bring this up with BLM and say having legal access through this needs to be a priority in this
process.
In this travel management plan.
So you mean with like states? Is that like
no,
a state?
With Pinedale Field.
No, with Pinedale Field.
With Caleb.
Okay. I think it'd be great if you would say that's a priority. I've met with Caleb, and he's fully supportive of doing this. But I think it would be great to have you guys say that this is a good thing to do.
Be more than happy to do that.
And then it's a half mile worth of road.
Yes.
Is that right?
Well,
and with that type of an easement granted from the BLM, do we have to bring that up to county specs? Would we need a 100-foot easement? Would we go for a 60-foot easement? Or would we just start the process and see where it goes?
Well, there would be they're going to be offering a flip easement for the road.
Right.
Probably 100 feet, I don't know. But the issue, the real issue, is can we get BLM to put some money into fixing the road up?
I don't know that that's going to happen.
Well,
it might, and that hasn't been said no to because they are motivated to get this solved. But there's going to be a lot of money has to be put into archaeology, too. Because there's archaeology all along that road. Oh, that's even where it's eroding, you can see living areas.
So they're going to have to do it.
So there's going to be archaeology.
They're going to have to do an EA then, probably.
Could be, yeah. And but before they can do anything like that, we need a road plan in place of what's the road going to look like, where's it going to go, what grounds are going to be disturbed. That's why they sent me off on a mission to go figure that part out. And you guys were my first stop. So I'm kind of thinking if BLM inputs, it may be in the archaeological side more so than the road building side, but I don't know that for sure. They have not offered yet either of those, but
we have a guy in this room could sure do the artwork.
Could do the what work?
The archaeology.
Oh, the archaeology, yeah.
He's sitting right there.
He is. And by the way, I brought this up to both the Historic Preservation Board and to the Seba County Historical Society. The Historical Society owns the property. The Historic Preservation Board's been actively involved in this because it involves National Register sites. There's three National Register sites there with the Green River Drift, the Rendezvous Grounds, and the Antelope Processing Archaeological Site. And so if, you know, through either one of those avenues, both groups are in favor of helping with this however it's possible. So through Preservation Board, we might be able to get some money, grant money. Historical Society can raise money.
Well, why don't we start with you guys meeting on Thursday on the travel management plan meeting and see if you can get the ball rolling with BLM and then go from there.
This is all new to me, but would if we could get an easement from the BLM to say, yeah, we'll give you an easement to build a road, then can the county come in and build a road? Or is that not something we do because we're not building any more county roads?
The county could once
they did all the archaeology,
the arch study is done and all that kind of stuff.
Something that we could, but I think Joel's on the right track. If we can get BLM to take responsibility and throw some money toward that.
We might get kind of a cost share arrangement,
sure,
yeah. Maybe.
Partner up.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that's out of the question. I think everybody's waiting to see who's going to put a foot forward in this. And because I know the BLM wants to solve it. It's a problem for them, too.
Yeah.
We'd certainly get a chance to start the conversation and move forward from there.
Yeah, I think so.
And it, like Joel said, it would just be a flip phase.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be a county road, well, so to speak, I guess it would be. But if they give
it
could
be.
Could be.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we don't, you know, us personally, we don't need a high-end road, but it does need to be stabilized, and that probably is 90% of the work of building a road, I guess, but...
Well, then at some point, the discussion would need to, to evolve around what kind of road do we need. Do we need a road up to standard county road specs, or do we need just a road that would work to serve the purpose, which could be something less than that?
And I think that would be the case with the BLM if they, if we got a flip in the easement. They wouldn't want a full county spec road going up to that area.
That's kind of what we talked about when I talked with Caleb, is try to improve what's there, not change the corridor, not change the route, just try to stabilize whatever
that means. Enter into a cost share with the BLM, and with that kind of understanding, then it might go pretty easy.
That'd be great. I'd appreciate it if you guys can bring that up and highlight it.
Got it. We'll start. How's that?
Sounds great.
Go ahead, Dave. You have a comment.
I just wanted to say that I am intimately familiar with everything on Trapper's Point. Albert Summers and I built the fence that kept the cows off the interpretive site ourselves, and I would volunteer my time and expertise at no cost to anybody to fully support whatever could be accomplished there.
Cool.
When I know that piece of ground left the back of my hand.
That'd be great. Arc studies, too, or... Yeah, beauty.
Yeah, everything's going to be minimal because I'm the guy who put the big circle around the map.
Right.
So it's SU 350.
Beautiful.
And, you know, the Trapper's Point excavation was my project, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
He can do it.
Yeah, and it, gee whiz, I mean, that could help a lot.
Well, I know a lot of the history. You guys, some of you guys might remember, but like 35 years ago, Nick Hickey was out there digging. And his report is, but he was out there doing a bunch of digging. And so, because the clearance is going to be difficult to articulate, but I know all the history of that, and I'm fully supportive of whatever we can do to get the, you know, the access, because you've got the separating grounds there for the drift and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there, also, it's an ACE, it's part of the Trapper's Point ACEC, and the most recent BLM's RMP, but one of the things is you can't do any kind of work in that 88,000-acre ACEC, unless it's in support of wildlife, range, the cattle, or archaeology. Mm-hmm. So we can get by all those hoops. I know all the bureaucracy, if you will, of that area, and I'm just happy to throw whatever expertise I have in it at no cost to anybody.
Cool.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. I think we've got a path forward. Let's see how it works.
Okay, from you guys, when you can do that, and we'll decide where to go from there.
Cool.
Thank you. Appreciate
you. Thanks, Clint. I'm sorry we won't be at the gear. I may send my wife.
I may be able to be there, Clint. I might be in town.
Okay. Appreciate having you there.
All right. Anybody need a break?
I guess.
Okay. Would you like
a break? Oh, I don't care. No? Todd's here.
Todd's here.
He's here.
Yep.
I wasn't on that.
Ours has been changed. Come on up.
What are you doing here?
Do you want to come with him, Andre?
No. I'm really here just to wait for him because we're going to
go look at Circuit Court.
Oh, okay. Carry on.
I figured we better update you on the two buildings. Conservation District. And I need a little where to go from there.
You should have just said money.
No, I'm not going to be the one that says that. This is the floor plan that they've decided to go with. So I talked with Mike, and I said, so have you got the money to move ahead? And he says, well, I'm not sure. Because I said, what we don't want to do, my suggestion is write an RFP for a design build, is what I said in your guys' emails. And get an architect and a contractor on board. But I hate to do that if the funds aren't there. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's...
Do they have any money to put towards?
He didn't say.
Didn't know or didn't
say? He didn't say. I run some quick numbers based on what we've seen.
All right. Now, what would it cost?
If you go back, I mean, the closest project that we've done is the attorney building.
Okay.
That's kind of a remodel. And it was it ended up being $130 a square foot. That was the average of the three bids that we got. Dan's bid wasn't quite that much, but I would rather just average the three that we received.
Did that include the roof?
Did not include the roof, but we don't have a roof on this one.
So I
held that one out. The architectural fees on that one was $24,000. So you roll that into this one, and you're looking at, now I got to find my notes.
Mr. Chairman.
Hold on just a sec. Give me that number real quick.
$243,000 plus, so about $275,000.
Commissioner Noel. That's Representative Summers. I'd like to call him back.
Oh, yeah. So we really can build this for $130 a square foot. Why can't we do that anywhere else?
Well, it's a remodel, and that's what we did for the attorney building.
Really?
That's what that ended up being. Actually, Dan's was quite a bit less. Dan, the average on the attorney building between the three bids that we got was $127.60.
Yeah, probably darn.
Okay. A square. For just the interior work, and then we had $35,000 architectural fees on that one.
Okay. Was that was with the materials and everything?
That was everything. Remember, Dan did the HVAC, the electrical,
right?
The flooring.
Okay.
Everything was included in that.
Okay.
This one's got concrete floors, which makes it a little bit difficult. Well, so did that one. We had to jackhammer for the plumbing for the restrooms. Mm-hmm. So comparable, and I hate to say it's anybody's guess, but it kind of is. Mm. The other one I looked at was the clubhouse, but it was a new construction. It's $497 a square.
Yeah.
Well.
For a design build. And I see the architectural fees being a little bit higher in this one than the attorney building. But that's still, it's still 10% of the estimate.
Okay.
So I'm at, like I said, I'm at $267,300 is where I'm saying that.
They ended up buying that for around $600, right?
I heard $400.
Holy cow.
It's about a third. It's about a third of what
they were asking.
But I don't know that. I don't know any of it is gospel. Because
I remember when we were looking
at it. They told us. I can't remember.
Yeah, when we were looking at it 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, they wanted, what, $1.2 million?
Yeah.
And it's a nice building. It is a nice building. But...
So probably what we need to do is invite the board in here
to discuss what they have.
Because I thought they had some money.
Yeah.
And I haven't shared these costs with Mike yet.
Okay.
His board only meets once a month, and that's why it took so long to get. We went through five different floor plans. And,
gotcha.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I told Mike. I said, you guys are the ones that need to.
Why don't you share that information with Mike at their next board, I guess.
What I'll do is I'll actually put it in the spreadsheet.
Okay.
instead of driving down the road on Dropbox.
Okay. And then after they have that information, we can invite them in for discussion.
Because, like I say, I visited with Mary a little bit. We ought to offer a stipend. Of sorts to the people, because we're going to ask for like a 10% design or something with their proposal.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Because all we're doing is giving them a layout. They're going to go in a little bit more depth than that.
Right.
And maybe put a nice look to it.
I see. But before we get that far, let's share that information with them, then let us talk with them at this meeting, and then I think you can we can move forward.
Okay.
If
that's,
so choose.
Yeah, and that's the reason I thought we better visit. And
I think let's do that.
Because we don't want to cost somebody money for pie in the sky.
Right.
Because it does cost, especially this type of a...
To put that information.
Yeah.
You bet. That, put a proposal. Right, yeah. Let's do it that way.
Okay. The other one that I was a little bit concerned on, but Mary helped me with that, was the storage building. And I only made one copy of that.
Is this the airport?
For the airport. If you'll pass them around, I just, that's pretty much what they're looking for. With the option, the reason I've got the other footings in there is if it's a metal building, it's going to look something similar to this.
Okay.
If it's a pole barn, it'll look like the footing that's... But I suggested that we don't, a building that size, let's not cast out steel buildings.
So are you suggesting not doing a pole barn?
I'm suggesting let's see where the numbers come in.
Oh, okay.
Because sometimes with a building, like say that size, a steel building is comparable to a pole barn.
I see.
Price-wise.
Okay. Gotcha.
We'll probably put in there an alternate for the concrete floor because that's going to throw his budgets, but we can throw an alternate in there. If they so happen to have the budget, then and want it.
Okay. And is it simply snow removal equipment that will be in there?
Yep.
Period.
Do they have a preference?
On steel versus pole?
Versus pole?
No, they just want a building. Mm-hmm. He wanted a pole barn.
And from what you explained to me, it's actually FAA's regulation that they have
a storage building.
Storage building. Can't put it in an empty hangar.
That's where it's at now.
Well, I know that's where it's at now.
And you walk in that empty hangar, and that's exactly what it is.
Empty.
Is there any regulation that says they can't keep that stuff in an empty hangar?
You know, I'm working with an airport guru.
Yeah.
I'll ask him the question.
Ask him, will you? I mean, if we've got empty space...
Yeah, who owns the hangar? Do we?
We do.
With
it's
the county.
The joint, it's the county.
The joint powers board.
Joint powers board.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. But still, that's still, quote, the county, so to speak.
Well, the government.
The government. Okay.
Yeah.
The county and the town.
Counties and town. County and towns. Let's see if that's a possibility. If
I'm actually meeting with him. Next few days.
To build another building just because we need to build another building.
It's,
when we've got place.
I mean, it is. It's. I think they had five planes in there, but...
Best guess, what would a pole barn cost?
You're probably close to that 80 to 100,000.
Yeah.
I mean...
If we can save ourselves 100 grand by just storing them...
I think that's what they've got budgeted is 100.
Yeah, they've got the money
to
build
them.
But, like
you
said...
They don't have to build it.
If... They waited to build it until they needed it and Big Piney boomed.
Yeah.
They'll be able to keep that money for quite a while.
Yeah, but there again, I mean, that, the other side, and I'm not trying to waive anything, but if it's a boom, that
it's
building
gonna
probably
cost
just,
more
that,
to build
building
it.
Probably
just
facetious.
Went. It could happen. Yeah, they'll see it coming.
But they'll have time to react.
Yes, they'll have time to build a pole barn.
Okay. Find that out for us.
I can do that.
Thank you.
And I think outside of that, I just wanted to keep you guys somewhat in the loop.
Cool.
It's been kind of a... And I picked a perfect day to travel.
Yeah, you did. It's a good thing you didn't travel yesterday.
Well, and I was supposed to meet with this airport guru tomorrow, but we had that plane wreck. And
really?
In Evanston.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't hear about that. Dang it.
And so they kind of canceled.
That's too bad.
Okay. It's not a good time to talk airports.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks, Todd.
You bet. You guys got
anything? Thanks for getting us up to speed.
We'll go look at your circuit clerk.
Tell me. Who Well,
I don't have a recess.
Let's have a 5-minute break and we'll come back and we'll.
Storage facility at the Big Pine Airport?
What's that?
Yes.
Yeah, down at the Marbleton Airport. Yeah.
And they do have a beautiful hangar.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
And it's huge.
It is. It's, yeah.
Okay. Rollins keeps it, you know. Have you ever watched World War II?
Yes.
Pearl Harbor?
Mm-hmm.
Those Quonset though? They keep theirs in a Quonset.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they get lots of jets in there because of the.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if the FAA didn't have a regulation.
Yeah. There might well be saying that you have to have a specific building for this equipment.
Oh, they probably do.
Probably do.
Joel, just listening, Mr. Wolchek, listening to, I want to say Rich.
Oh, Chris.
Chris.
Yeah.
And then
Clint Gilchrist.
All right.
Yeah, we'll
thanks for that.
Yeah. You two are like the blind leading the blind.
BLM, it sounds like everybody is on board.
Hey, we know everybody,
this road.
Hey,
you know, so and there again, this is the way I struggle with this.
Yeah,
we're why can't we make this happen?
Joel,
I think there's a chance.
Can I get your help for a minute?
What was that you just said, Mike?
Well, everybody's on board to make this happen.
Yeah.
From the archaeologist to the head of the BLM to the county commissioners. So why can't we just
right? How much time have you spent in government?
Well, I understand that, but I just struggle with that.
Oh, I do. I do too. Yeah.
Well, I know that.
Why can't we just move forward?
Yeah. Just, you know,
that's simple.
Put all the dirt in the pile and have them sift it.
It's like I told the motocross guys this morning. We're moving at the speed of government.
Well, and that's true. And they, you know, and the owner was here, and you know, he wanted to be there for the second. I mean, it's a done deal, but it's not.
It's not. He got to jump through the hoops.
And that's why I'm feeling better about. The wild. It's up to us. Just do it. Absolutely.
Anything important?
Just trying to help Albert with the support to the endow bill.
Okay. Carry on.
Have we hit a brick wall or?
I think we did that yesterday.
You hit the brick wall yesterday.
Hit that brick wall yesterday.
In other words, you stirred the hornet's nest. Yesterday.
Basically, industry is now cocked and loaded. They were pretty laxy-daisy until yesterday.
Until yesterday.
Yeah,
it's not good to give out your game.
No, Mike.
Two days.
Good. How are you doing?
Hanging in there.
Hi,
Mike. How are you?
Goodness. Good.
Good to see you. All dressed up. All dressed up. No place to go. Yeah.
For Albert Summers and for the broadband. Apparently you have not signed that yet.
Just take a deep breath. Yeah, deep breath.
Oh, okay.
Kick your legs. Deep breath.
Deep breath.
Sounds like a rough day already.
Oh,
okay.
I'm going to have to stand during Paul's presentation, you know, or I'm going to be asleep.
I know. This is torture.
You should tell him that the new commissioners don't want to vote on anything until I see you. we just don't trust anybody we have never seen.
Yeah. He'll say, fine, I don't approve your audit.
Yeah.
Guess what? Look at that. Oh, and you know what happens is that if your audit doesn't get filed on time, the state engages an auditor and sends that.
Ooh, really?
Yeah.
What did you decide on the billing?
So we
money?
What we're going to do is Todd is going to go talk to the conservation district about what he has found and what he assumes the price is going to be. Then the conservation district is going to come back to us and talk to us and see if they are able to cost share.
Didn't mean to interrupt, but
no, that's good. Knock yourself out. Yes. That's why there's five of us, right?
Okay. Anybody else I would ignore, but with Albert, he knew where I was at today, so for him to call was...
So this is one of the letters that the industry wrote in support.
This is... He must have got my message.
He's on his way to Cheyenne right now, and he'll get Albert a signed copy and the first thing tomorrow.
It's too late. Albert needs it by 6 tonight. But
I don't know where he's at.
Albert?
He's up, no, Paul is on his way, but he didn't say where he was.
Albert has his copy. It's just not signed.
Okay.
So it'll be okay tonight.
His copy of what?
Hmm?
Copy of what?
Letter of support to the Endow bill.
From
Jonah Energy.
Oh, I got you.
We've got Jonah right now, PEP right now, Ultra right now.
Can you email Albert and just tell him Paul will be there tonight?
That's Paul. Oh, is it Ulrich?
Yeah.
That'd be nice if we had a copy.
It's right here. Actually, Dennis has it now. I forwarded it.
It's the one I read.
Yeah, you got sidetracked, didn't you?
So I went to committee here.
We just left in the dark.
Well, I mean, we had to write a letter of support, right?
To who?
Yeah. To get him on the horn.
To the governor in terms of his broadband project.
Oh, yes, we did. We did. Someone did for us.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but I mean.
Did we shoot? That's right.
You can guarantee it was Mary.
I don't think that's appropriate.
I've chopped that letter up.
And I sent an email to our legislators also.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, we mentioned in our letter there would be letters coming from industry. It'd be nice to know that we had a copy of a letter from industry so we all know what's going on.
Well, yeah.
That's my point. And one of us might even notice that the letter wasn't signed.
Hey, how about that?
Well, hey, is it? I'll be done with this job.
Yeah.
You can't take
yourself too seriously.
No.
This is one Paul wrote. The other one's from Eugene. They just bought
Eugene. Hey, I'm good. Paul, how are you today?
Eugene.
Good. Hey. It's okay.
The letter I
it's
read.
It's the way it goes. Okay. Shutting his door.
Oh. I almost plagiarized from my letter.
Oh. Hello.
Hi. I got you on our speakerphone, Paul.
Okay. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yeah, Paul, yes. This is Andy Nelson. Andy. We're just in a little bit of a break. Commissioner Bowsman will be right back shortly.
Okay.
But we have a full coffee pot, and we're just about ready to go.
You need it to stay awake. All right. So get those filled up.
Pretty much.
All right. Over here in Lusk, I thought, this weekend.
Yeah, I was. How about that?
So... So to go okay over there, I saw it advertised or something. So
yeah, it went real well. They had good turnout and everything was really good. Yeah. Okay, Commissioner Bowsman is back, and I think we are back in session and ready to roll. Turn it over to you, Paul.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you for doing this conference call, with the weather, I wasn't quite sure where we were going to be yesterday afternoon, so I got everything up to Mary, and I hope I believe she got everything printed out and given to you. And I want to stress, if you would like me to come up on the 6th, I think that would be your next meeting. I can do that, and hopefully the roads and the weather will cooperate a little bit better at that time. So, I mean, that would be a decision up to you, but I want to keep that open for you. I'd have to do it, morning or early afternoon, but I would be happy to do that next meeting if you feel the need. So
we appreciate the offer, Paul. I think we'll be just fine with a conference call here.
Okay. All right. Would you like me to proceed like I have in the past?
Yes, please. I think that's a good idea. We've got about an hour slated out, so hit the high spots.
Well, and just interrupt me if you have any questions. I always start with the shorter three-page document. I'll let you get to there.
Yeah, we're there.
Okay. The American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, who is my rulemaking body, who governs our procedures. In any audit we do, they have required communications that I have to make with the governing board for the entities we audit. And so to document this, that we've done this, we do this in writing. Just briefly, I went through, I know Commissioner Nelson and Bowsman have heard me go through this numerous times. It hasn't changed a whole lot. And the new commissioners, I did go through this last year, too. Just go through what we've audited and what the standards we performed our audit in accordance with. The second paragraph there goes through management's responsibility for selection, use, appropriating policies and procedures. My job is to audit those procedures, and those procedures are described in note 2 to the financial statements. The third paragraph goes through accounting estimates that are used in preparing the financial statements. We have some accounting estimates that we feel are significant, and they are the proportionate share of net pension liability. I've talked about that in the past. I'll speak on that a little bit again when we get into the financial statements. Depreciation expense is always an estimate, and so that's the depreciation on the fixed assets, the buildings, roads, heavy equipment, vehicles that the county has. Then on the top of page 2, we have the footnotes and disclosures, and we have to identify the significant disclosures that we have that we believe that we have in the financial statements, and that is the net pension benefit obligation. Again, I'll talk about that. This is our third or fourth year into having that disclosure in the financial statements. Any difficulties we had in performing the audit, any corrected or uncorrected misstatements, any disagreements with management, management's representation, and I'll get this up to you to have ready for the next meeting on the 6th of March. That'll be the sign off on this so I can get these finished and transmitted to the state. Consultation with other independent accountants. If you disagree with any of the findings that I have or any of the suggestions, you're always entitled to a second opinion. There at the bottom of the page, we get calls from time to time, Mary calls or Roxana calls. We get calls from time to time, payroll items. We had Mary called with how to treat a prize or award that was awarded and we needed the 1099, things like that. Just to notify you that communication goes on, and each time that I offer, I'm asked for advice and offer advice, I do not feel the need to run to you, the governing board, to let you know about that. It's kind of my discretion what I bring to your attention. If there's a matter that comes to my attention that I feel that you need to be aware of, then I do. Then it is my obligation to do that. On page 3, we just always like to. QuickBooks is a great program. Nothing against it. It is just a little bit higher risk of a program as it allows you to alter transactions, which makes it easy to use, of course. But we always like to let you know that program, that there is that limitations on that program, and there is some entities in the county that are using the QuickBooks. Other matters there at the bottom of the page. They're in the middle of the page. It's kind of a technicality, but we have what we call in here required supplementary information. That's not my job really to audit it. I don't have to. I do audit it because that's where I build. That's the base of our audit. But I'm not required technically to express an audit opinion on that. So what we issue is an in relation opinion to that data. Just means to in relation to the financial statements at the front of the report, that there's no material differences between that. So it's kind of a technical item. And again, the same goes for the combining, where we have some combining statements where we summarize data from the smaller entities, the component units, and the some of the other entities like the REC and the museum and things like that, that get summarized down. We do not issue an audit on those opinion on those individually. We issue an audit opinion on those in total. But there are some schedules that help supplement that for the users. And then there at the bottom, this report is restricted, is intended solely for the county commissioners and management. So this is my communication to the governing board required by American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. Any questions on that?
I think we're good.
Okay. Now, if we get into the big audit, the actual audit report, if you turn to page 2 and 3, and I have to apologize, my cover page, I need to update the date on that. I'll get that taken care of. I've got some things working here with Betty at the golf course. I need to have her response on some things that we had for findings, and I've been in communication with her to get those resolved, and I'll get back into those when we get more towards the end of the report. But if you have any questions on this, please interrupt me, and I'll try to cover and answer your questions. But I just kind of wanted to cover what's all included in the report, and so the easiest way to do this is go through the table of contents. On 1 to 3 is going to be our auditor's report, and this is just going to be describe the audit procedures that we're responsible for, our opinion on those financial statements, and then also we need to cover we were required to issue a report on compliance with laws and regulations. And that's so our report is on page 1 through 3. And then on pages 4 through 5, we have the statement of net position and the statement of activities. And these are going to be the full accruals, the summarized data. It's going to be focusing on all the assets of the county. So it's going to include the fixed assets and the long-term debt of the county. It's going to try to incorporate all-inclusive of all the assets receipts, revenues, and everything that the county has. Then the governmental fund financial statements, they're on 6 through 9. And their major focus is going to be on spendable resources. So that's excluding the assets and liabilities that are not in spendable form. So these financial statements are going to focus on what did we have to spend, how did we spend it, what do we have left to spend, and where it was derived from. And then in between each of the balance sheets and the profit and loss statements there, we have a reconciliation between the full accrual on 4 and 5. On 10, 11, and 12, these are going to be the financial statements for the proprietary funds, and you only have one proprietary fund, and that's going to be the golf course. That's the only activity that the funds are set up, the activity that is primarily driven by user charges. So, I mean, a proprietary fund is a fund that's drives its revenue from user charges. Other funds are based upon taxpayers and sales tax and things like that. But the golf course gets its own set of financial statements just because of the nature that's solely the fund that you have that's like that. And then on page 13 is a fiduciary statement of net assets and liabilities, and that's just going to be assets that you've collected, the county's collected, and holding on behalf of other entities. On page 14 through 31 are going to be the footnotes, and that's going to include items like the pension obligations, long-term debt, the accounting principles used in preparing these financial statements. I'll go through a couple of those when we get to there. Then we have the required supplementary information, and this is, I talked about this, is the information that I'm technically not required to give an opinion on, and that's going to be the budget and actual information for the general fund, and then reconciliation of the budget information to the statement of revenues, expenditures, and changes in fund balances is on page 8. And then we have a bunch of schedules on 37 through 40. That detail your participation in the Wyoming retirement system. You participate in three parts of the Wyoming retirement system, and so we have to disclose your proportionate shares of those, your participation in the Wyoming retirement system. Okay, and then on the top of the next page, on the table of contents, we have the combining statements. These summarize the smaller entities, and then the balances are carried forward into the front set of the financial statements. And then we have our, on 45 through 46, have our report over internal control and compliance with laws and regulations. So that goes into our testing, and then our schedule of findings, and then responses, the items that we noted during the audit that we wanted to address on 47 and 48. And then the last item there on status of prior year findings is on page 49. We have to report on how you resolved issues that were noted in the prior audit on 49. Any questions on any of that exciting data?
I think we know where we're headed.
All right. Okay. All right. On our report on pages 1 and 2, it just goes through, 1 goes through our responsibility, page 1, second paragraph, our responsibility, the second part there on our auditor's report, we have to identify the auditor's responsibility and the management's responsibility, and then the item there on the top of page 2, opinions, we believe these financial statements present fairly in all material respects the financial position of the county. Then on page, I'm just going to do some highlights in the financial statements, if you don't mind doing that, on that, and then we'll talk about the findings a little bit. On page 4, this is the statement of net position for the entire county. We have broken it out into the primary government and the peripheral entities, the component units, that have separate corporate power. So that's the library and the fair primarily. And then the business activities, again, this is just going to be the golf course. Operations of the golf course are in there because that's only business type activity again. And then the governmental funds rolls up everything else that's included in the financial statements. Now, the big items, we have total assets of $353 million. A lot of that's in investments, and a lot of that's in the capital assets. $171 million is the depreciated value of the capital assets. The one item I'd like to point out, here again, I've talked in the last couple years about the net pension liability. So you participate in three plans. The county participates in three plans, the public employee plan, and the public employee plan, the law enforcement plan, and the volunteer EMT firefighter plan. And so the total year liabilities for the three plans combined comes up to about $11.3 million there, three quarters of the way page down under the liabilities. What we do is, I've explained this in the past, we take the total liability, the total benefit obligation of the plan, they measure assets available against future benefits, and then we apply your percentage of the contribution to each of the three plans to come up with the amount that's reflected as the liability. The other item down there that's been fairly new the last two or three years is the tax rebate payable. And that's the money we come back, even though that's being paid over over 5 years, we have to roll the tax amount, the general county's portion of the rebates payable into the financial statements as a liability. There is a couple new items under the business type activities from the prior year. The capital lease obligation, that's a new caption this year, short term and the long term portion. That's because the capital lease of the tractor and related mowing equipment on the golf course. So it comes down to the net there at the bottom. Then we have the net accounting net position broken out in the amount that's invested in the capital assets, amount that's restricted primarily for state and county road monies that's restricted. Museum money, things like that. That's also reflected as restricted and then the unrestricted portion. So the net position of the county came down to $339 million, assets less liabilities. On page 5, statement of activities. And again, this is going to be the upside down. This is full accrual, so it's incorporating depreciation. And it's an upside down income statement because you start at the top left corner. We start with expenses, what you charge for those services, operating grants and contributions received. And then the fifth column over is governmental activities. That's the net cost to the taxpayers for providing the activity. So it's expenses, less charges for services, less the grants and contributions gives us the net operating expenses for the county. And then if you read down there in the fifth column, we have to supplement that with the property taxes, auto fees, sales tax, PILT, severance tax, and so on. So our change in net position for the county actually declined by about $6.8 million. Primarily a lot of that's due to the depreciation on the fixed assets. Okay, any questions on the statement of net position and statement of activities on the full accrual?
Not yet,
okay. I'll get going here a little quicker. Okay, on page 6 through 9 is the fund financial statements. And this is just focusing on spendable resources, so these drop out all the fixed assets and the long-term debt because they're not in spendable form. And so here we come down to a total. We've got the general fund and then the peripheral funds like the museum and the rec board and things like that, and the leftover money from the fire district, that's all in there, and then non-major funds, and then a total. Of course, a lot of everything's all tied up in the investments there. So the major part of the assets is in investments in the government securities and the certificates of deposit. And then the liabilities are all short term. Here again, we have the tax rebate payable. Again, this amount is different here on this because this is only going to be the amount that's due in the 17-18 fiscal year because this is focusing on short term assets, liabilities. Anything over 1 year would be the long term portion of that tax rebate payable. On page seven reconciles the two balance sheets. And then on 8, we have the profit and loss on the short-term basis. We did have a decline. We had a big decline in. We had a decline in value on the investments. Prior year had a big increase, so it goes kind of up and down. It just depends on where it's cut off at. On the investments, so we had a positive $2 million for the year for the general fund. And the other peripheral entities were about break even. The transfer there for the fund, the transfer, the 21,782, that's just money that the rec board paid on behalf of the golf course for the tractor lease. And then on page 9, we reconcile the two profit and losses. And again, the major item there, as you can see on page 9, two items is the pension expense, as that's long-term, and depreciation expense, because those two items are not in spendable form. On page 10, 11, and 12, this just relates to the golf course. So we have a balance sheet on 10, a profit and loss on 11, and a statement of cash flows on 12. Then on 13, just tax, 13 is agency funds, and these are monies that the county's holding on behalf of other entities. So we have the tax collections, and then we have the accounts held for the firefighters that are being administered through the clerk's office. Then on 14, we have the notes to the financial statements. And 1 and 2, 1 describes the reporting entity. 15 starts note 2. And that goes through the summary of significant accounting policies, and it goes on for quite a while. To page 20. Then we have note 3 describing the Wyoming retirement system and your participation in that. And we've broken that out between the three plans. As you can see on 21, there's your contributions that you made to each plan at the top, and then your proportionate share of the net pension liability there is in the middle of the page. At the bottom of 21, you have your proportionate shares of each plan. And then on top of 22, you have what the additional pension expense is reflected in these financial statements by this accounting entry, by us, by recognition of this liability. And then we have deferred inflows or outflows. They measure a net difference between protection and actual earnings and so on. So there's some other things that this all comes from the Wyoming retirement system. We just apply the percentages, your percentages, to the information they provide. And then 23, and the bottom of 23 goes to that, through the actuarial assumptions. In preparing these financial statements, I question some of these. I don't really see there on the bottom of 20, I don't really see salary increases a whole lot from 4.25 to 6% anymore around here. But that's what they use on that. And then on page 24, go through their expected rates of returns on the plan assets. And then on the bottom of 24 goes to the discount rate they use to value all this information. Then on 25, goes through what if they change the discount rate, what your liability changes from. So if the discount rate goes down 1%, your liabilities go up significantly. If the discount rate does better than it projected, your portion of the liability, of course, goes down. On page 26, the details of fixed asset activity of the county. Then on 27, we've got a footnote on the cash and investments. And their future maturities, participation in the WildStar investment pool, custodial credit risk that you have with the funds held at various banks. And then on page 28 through the medical plan, your risk management policies. Page 29 goes through the landfill closure costs. And then on note 9, on page 29, restricted fund balances, money set aside or in, restricted for specific purposes. And then there's some, then 9 through 13 are just some housekeeping entries that we need to disclose. And then on page 31, the note regarding the tax rebates and how much will be withheld from future tax collections for entities included in these financial statements is there in note 14. Okay. On 32 and 33 through 34 is a budget and actual for the general fund for the primary government. We always have to present original budget, amended budget, and actual and the variance. And these numbers come right out of the monthly reports, right out of the clerk's office and the treasurer's office. These are directly out of the data that's provided to us. And then on page 35 through 36, goes through the differences between the budget and the accounting previously in the financial statements, on the fund financial statements. And then on 37 through 38, I refer to all these disclosures regarding the Wyoming retirement system. We've broken it out between the public employee plan, the law enforcement plan, and the volunteer firefighter EMT plan. Just go through contractually required contributions and how much you made, there was no excess or deficiency, and your covered payroll. And so you contribute 16.62% of the employees, of the payroll to the Wyoming retirement system. Same for the law enforcement plan, same data for the law enforcement plan, and the volunteer EMT isn't based upon payroll, so the same data, but we can't do that last computation for the volunteer firefighter plan. On page 38, same information for the library. And then on page 39, repeats your proportionate shares. Your proportionate share of the net pension liability, the covered payroll, and then percentages of the payroll of the net pension liability, and then the funded percentages. Do always like to point, I mean, there hasn't been a significant change on the funded portions there on the bottom of 39. The public employee plan had very little change, funded at 73.42. The prior year was at 73.40. Law enforcement plan had same thing, really did not have a significant change between the funded percentages and the volunteer firefighter EMT plan, same thing, didn't have a significant change. I kind of was expecting to have a bigger change on this just based upon the market conditions and things like that, but they really did significantly change on that. And then on we skip ahead to 41 and 42, this and 43 and 44. This is just data that's summarized and brought forward into the financial statements on 41. It's the rec board, fire board, museum board. And then on 43, it's the fair and the library. And then on 45 and 46 is our report on compliance with laws and regulations and internal control over financial reporting. And then our findings there are followed up on page 47 and 48. We've had this, the first finding, 2017-01, things at the county, I mean, there's a multiple level approval and things like that. At the outlying entities, that's where nothing against them or things like anything like that. It seems like usually where something's going to occur, it's at the outlying entity where a problem's going to occur. And the board of trustees for those entities need to be aware and know what their duties are. And that they're doing their duty diligently by reviewing the bills and things like that, taking an active interest in the operations of the outlying entities. And then we had some changes there at the golf course. They were using an outside bookkeeper, and I think the firm, the bookkeeping, contract bookkeeping had some changes. And this again has changed. They have taken their work to another bookkeeper, and I've been in contact with her, and she's done the rec board books for a long time and worked with her, and I've talked with Betty a little bit about these things, and she's going to get on top of these, and I'm going to work with her on the last item there on the 004 to get these things taken care of and back on course. And I think you're in good hands with her, but we did have some bookkeeping problems there over the that occurred over the last year.
So she's on top of those now, then, Paul?
Or? Yeah, they kind of. I was kind of waiting. They were having some problems getting everything closed out on the golf course, and then all of a sudden I knew that Betty had and that they had changed to they were going to have doing the books, and she's worked, like I said, she used to do the golf course or do the books for the golf course, what, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, and going to take that back over, and I was in contact with her yesterday. I need to work with her because I need to have a response on these items, but I mean I'm going to have her help me go through those and put something together on those to respond how these are going to get corrected, and get them cleaned up on that. Then on the last item there, we had a glitch there with the IRS on their collections through the credit card company. The credit card company's information did not match what the IRS had on file. I kind of blame that on the IRS. Could you get these notices that the tax ID number doesn't match the name? Well, they don't always. I mean, you have doing businesses as and all kinds of different things. And so the credit card company started withholding, backup withholding on that, which we need to get refunded on that.
Okay.
So we get these notices all the time where you submit your 1099s or whatever, and they say, well, the names don't match, so they tell you to backup withhold. Well, a lot of times it's, it might have been Rendezvous Meadow golf course doing business at or Sublette County Rec Board doing business. So I mean, it was, they got it corrected, but in the meantime, so it stopped, but in the meantime the credit card company took some backup withholding on that, and I don't think that I probably should have reported on this last year, but I thought they were in the process of getting that refunded, I'm not seeing that any progress was made on that, but there's been some transition there, and I talked with Betty about it, emailed her back and forth about it yesterday. She really didn't know that it even existed, I told her I'd help her out to do whatever she needed to do with that.
Okay.
That's kind of what I wanted to cover on that. If you have questions, or if you want to take it, look it over, have questions next, I'll be happy to get on the conference call or, like I said, attend the meeting next month.
I think we're in good shape, Paul. We'll take this home and digest it. And,
all right.
If anybody has any questions, we can certainly contact you.
You can get through with Mary, and she can email me or call me. I mean, it doesn't have to be at the meeting either.
Okay.
I'm here to answer your questions, and I appreciate your time. I apologize, there's three of you commissioners there that I've never met. I told Mary I'd sure like to come to meet them. I've worked with Coach Andy and Joel for quite a while.
Yeah. That's okay, Paul. You're not missing anything.
Okay.
We've brought this. This is Mac Rawhauser. We've brought this commission to a new level.
I'm sure with Andy leading, no.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it could do nothing but get better. That's for sure.
Yeah. Paul, this is David Burnett. I actually have one quick question for you. I don't know if you can get back with the answer.
All right.
When you're looking at the disbursements from the golf course, you note that out of 22 transactions, six did not have supporting documentation.
What
kind of money are we talking about?
You know, I mean, I kind of look at it and make sure they're reasonable. I'd have to give you exactly a list of what they are. I mean, we do everything by sample. And I could get back with
that's,
you on
that's
that.
Fair. That's fair. Just get back with Mary. I'll just okay. An inquiry.
And I can even provide you the work paper of what we sampled. I mean, because send you a list of what there was and what there was. And I'm not saying that it was never there. You know, again, this went through a couple stages here because right before we received the golf course records, we got them from Betty. I hope they turned everything over to her.
Well, it's just a red flag when you have 27%. So if you get back with Mary, that's good. Just an observation.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I'd be happy to do that.
Okay. Any further questions for Paul, gentlemen?
No, sir.
All right. Riveting as usual, Paul. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your time, and I appreciate your understanding on the weather, and my apologies.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks Paul. A bunch.
All right. Okay. We'll talk to Mary. I'll be in touch with you this week then. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, yeah. I think Commissioner Burnett is the only commissioner I can remember in 7.5 years that ever had a question for me.
It should be the last one.
That was a good question.
And he had the percentages.
Go through this.
That's the point. It's killing me, man. Yeah.
That's pretty outstanding.
The only thing that, you know, when you're listening, and he talked about QuickBooks, mm-hmm. how you could put something into QuickBooks and then take it out.
That's why I use it.
That would well, but you're all by yourself. Yeah, right. It would scare me in an organization that does everything by QuickBooks and has that opportunity to be able to do that.
We've seen some QuickBooks financial statements.
Oh, really?
You have to.
Well, maybe I have and don't know it. See.
No, I think it was a very good catch.
Exactly.
We need to keep an eye on that.
Oh, man.
Because I have a gut feeling it's going to.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I figured for that.
We will take a break.
Yeah.
I apologize. I just woke up the last 5 minutes.
Yeah. I just saw that in front of you.